passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade take the mic.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rewind to Raw. I am John Pollock alongside Wei Ting, a very special edition of Rewind to Raw, where for the first hour, it will be commercial free. Hello, Wei.
I don't know if we can guarantee that, actually.
We're not, actually. There will probably be a commercial in the first hour. Got to pay the bills.
No, we do. We do. I mean, we're not, you know, listen, we're not trying to compete with the NFL here. You know, we got no pressure on us.
Yeah, I mean everyone just flocks here after the Monday Night Football game. Anyway, this is the unofficial after show for everybody. How are you?
I'm doing good, John. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Getting over my congestion. Had a rough day on Sunday. Survivor Series kicked my ass on Saturday night. It took me forever to fall asleep, and then I woke up at 3:45 in the morning, and yeah. I was just awake. And I barely slept. I had slept like 90 minutes and then was up until 7 a.m. Just like couldn't sleep. And then I was just a terrible day on Sunday. I could barely talk. My voice was all messed up and stuff. But anyway,
you need to be sleep trained. You know, we got to get you on the same program that that Oscar's on.
I'm all for it. It was my sleep is usually not that bad, but it was yeah, it was just terrible over the weekend, and I'm just still battling this this pseudo cold it's just like lingering.
I'm getting the sense that everybody, like with a kid in school, is sick in the city.
Oh, it's nonstop. Like our family doctor told us, like with two young kids, you should be happy if you go 2 weeks uninterrupted where one of them isn't sick. It's like that's a wonderful stretch to aim for. 2 whole weeks of being illness free. It's just everybody is sick. Yeah. Anyway, it's finally catching up to me.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I was feeling it, but then I saw that tweet or Byron Saxton announce a commercial free hour. It's like, you know what? I'm ready. Give me a 3 hours commercial free. Make Raw 4 hours, you cowards.
This show will make you feel better, okay? And if not, this podcast, I'm sure, will make you feel
way
better.
Way talking to you always makes me feel wonderful.
Oh, didn't we say we were going to have some coquitos later? Maybe not if you're feeling unwell.
You know what? Let's
because I don't have it.
I don't have mine either, and I don't want to like leave.
You know what? Tomorrow, honestly.
Mine's frozen. I think you have to take it out and let it like.
Really?
It just all.
I didn't realize it was this much work.
Yeah, I know. let's take them out at the start of Ask Away.
Okay.
On Tuesday. Smart. Okay.
Yeah.
And we will make our way to them by the end of Ask Away, which is going to be happening Tuesday, and we will be live at 2 p.m. Eastern time for.
You tell me.
all patrons.
There you go. Yes.
As I wrote in my update. So that is the plan. All patrons can listen or watch Ask Away Live Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. If you can't watch live, if you're watching soccer or something, then get lost. But you can also download it afterwards if you are a cafe member. So it'll be up Tuesday evening to download. Are you following the World Cup at all?
No, not at all. I mean, I maybe a little bit just to, you know, for the novelty of seeing Canada participate. They scored one goal at least.
They have scored one goal in what, two games? Something like that?
I think so, yeah.
So I was at Starbucks the other day and a gentleman came in and sat at the table near me, hooked up his Wi-Fi to watch the game, and he just sat back and watched the game on Starbucks Wi-Fi. So I couldn't help but like watch it, and Canada's up 1-0. I was like, okay. And then it's like it's 4-1 by the end of it all. But
yeah,
you know what? It's a monumental feat that Canada is actually in the World Cup itself.
We really are the ricochet of the World Cup, I think. We're just happy to be there. We've already won.
You have already won if you are Canada.
Yeah.
So anyway, there you go. I'm watching actually that FIFA series on Netflix.
I didn't know about it.
FIFA Uncovered. Very, very interesting documentary.
What are you learning?
How Qatar got the World Cup. It was through some... you should watch it. It's like a four-part series. I don't want to ruin it. There's some corruption in FIFA, Wei. That's your byline.
I get the sense. Have you watched the Teddy Hart series yet?
No. I haven't seen anyone talk about it, and I don't even know how to... I'm sure... I haven't looked for it online, but we don't even have it up here in Canada on a platform.
Yeah. It's on Peacock, of course, in the US, but I'm sure there are means that you might be able to, you know, get your hands on it. I
can't say I'm going out of my way to find that one.
No, why not?
It's not really, I'm not all that interested in seeing it. I mean, I've heard nobody talk about this documentary since it came out last week. Have you seen any of it?
Brayden and Davey, I think, have spoken about it.
Okay.
And I think they're in the middle of watching it, but I really haven't heard myself either. It's interesting. I mean, it's an interesting topic, obviously. I'm at least curious to sample the first episode.
Have they put all of the episodes out, or are they releasing them weekly?
I'm probably the wrong person to ask. Chat room, let us know. John Cino specifically, you could let us know. Jacino also says Canada's been eliminated. So,
are they out already? On points?
I don't know. I guess so.
Okay. Well, there you go. Well, they had a good run.
Yeah, one goal.
Yeah, we faced Belgium and Croatia. They did it in for us.
I guess. I don't know. This is a terrible sports podcast, if that's what you came for.
I mean, we're not following the
Cena says all three episodes are up. So.
Okay. Well, there you go. Should we just let... We can just go by the chat. Just go by those comments.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, what's everyone else saying?
Sam Banks says, the Teddy Doc came on right after Raw on my TV. Oh, interesting.
On TV? They ran that on USA? Sam, give us an update. Did this run on...
This is just confusing when we're trying to, you know, let the chat room run the show.
Okay.
Let's start over. Let's start this whole thing over.
Are we live? Yes, we are live. Making sure.
Okay.
Let's get into what is coming up this week. Are you excited for Ask Away on Tuesday?
Very much so. Yeah.
Got a lot of questions this month, I think.
Really? Okay. Well, forum.postwrestling.com, we will answer almost any and all of your questions, pretty much like 99.9% of the questions we answer. So if you're a Post Wrestling Cafe Patreon, you can get your questions up there. Of course, though, if you're going to be a YouTube member, you can join us live and drop a question in the live chat as well tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern.
Yes. On Wednesday, we will be doing Rewind to Dynamite. And then on Thursday, I'm looking forward to this, Wei. We are going to be doing the Guardians of the Galaxy Christmas special. It will be waiting. WH Park and getting the invite himself. I was going to play a song right now, but then I realized we might get flagged, so I'm not going to play that. I have been listening to the Guardians of the Galaxy Christmas soundtrack.
That right?
Yes. Wow. Yes.
You really did. So that tells me already that you actually quite enjoyed this.
I'm not gonna show my hand. You gotta tune in on Thursday to find out. But the perfect length, okay? The perfect length.
Yeah, really. Like, you know, John really has not done one of these with us for a long time. These Marvel reviews.
I've never asked.
You're not watching the series, I know. right? Because you're a very busy man. But this was one that I feel like has been tailor-made for you. First of all, it's a Christmas movie. You're a Christmas movie expert, you know?
Expert, I'm sure.
You love the Guardians of the Galaxy. That's your, like, isn't that your favorite Marvel property?
Probably, yeah. No, you presented compelling evidence that I couldn't say no to.
And it's 40 minutes.
Those three things right there. I mean, it's like I have no excuse. I can't get out of this one. I look forward to it. I look forward to chatting with both of you. So that's on Thursday, the Guardians of the Galaxy Christmas special that is up on Disney Plus, starring Kevin Bacon and Dave Bautista. Okay, that's all you need to know.
Yeah. He's great.
Then this weekend, we've got Rewind to SmackDown Friday night for patrons. Saturday, live at 9 p.m. Eastern time, the NWA podcast assembles. Chris Ely, Andrew Thompson, and Nate Milton coming at you on a Saturday night right here, youtube.com/postwrestling. Always a great time when the NWA podcast comes together.
9 p.m. Eastern is when they're scheduled to go live. So they'll be taking your questions and live interactions with the forum. A lot to catch up with those guys.
Yes. And then the whole week winds down with WrestleNomics Radio, your Sunday tradition, and three post-wrestling cafe shows coming at you this week. $6 gets you in the door for all of our bonus content at the cafe, access to all of our archives. And yes, you can check out Ask Away Live, 2 p.m. Eastern time. Plus, we've got our Black Friday sale going on for a couple more days. Store.postwrestling.com, 25%. That's a quarter off of all shirts, including our heads split in two, sharing the same brain, myself and Wei Ting. You can grab a beautiful WrestleNomics t-shirt, the Four Pillars, the very popular shirt that has made its way onto television screens worldwide, the post-wrestling hat, as so adorned by the likes of Wei Ting, Benno, and many, many more. A very, very popular hat. And that's just a peek at it. The toque. Very popular in my household. I wear this all the time.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Don West.
Okay. Just showing everyone their deals.
25% off all t-shirts, store.postwrestling.com.
Are you ready for some news, Wei?
Let's get into it.
You know, sometimes Wei texts me during the day. He's like, I want to chat about the news now. I'm like, wait, you got to wait till tonight. You got to wait till we're recording. He's so excited to talk about all these news items. We're going to start off with the Survivor Series press conference. Did you catch any of this?
I did catch it, John. Yes.
What did you think about? I was kind of dismissive of this press conference, but I had to sit down actually watch it myself. What did you think? They did one of these at Clash at the Castle. I can't remember if they did one for Extreme Rules or not. But what have you thought now that we've seen a few of these WWE press conferences? Like, this is actual media mixed with like some of the people from the Bump that they have in there, Byron Saxton as well. So what did you think just about the presentation itself of the press conference?
You know, I feel like this year is the year where the pro wrestling press conference has really kind of, you know, become a bigger, big top. It really had a breakthrough year. Press conferences in professional wrestling, I think. So
they really went to the next level this year, catered by Mindy's.
That's it, yeah. And as usual, I think there are a lot of growing pains anytime you try to mix real world settings with professional wrestling characters. In the past, with both, I would maybe less so with AEW and more so with the WWE instances of these sort of things, it's been a bit of an awkward combination of people who think that they're supposed to stay in character the entire time and people who just don't feel that way. In the Paul Levesque era, maybe we can kind of, you know, draw like a clear line of like what these are supposed to be. Paul Levesque, anytime he, you know, does one of these, is very much just being Paul Levesque. And you can argue that, like, you know, what is the on-screen Paul Levesque character these days anyway? He's essentially just a real person, still the same guy. So you very much just kind of like, you know, get some good amount of information, I would say, from him, some good sound bites. He talked about reassessing War Games, Hell in a Cell, Money in the Bank, you know, and just match types rather than just kind of having them be mandatory pay-per-view only things, which I think most fans are probably happy to hear about. But as far as like the actual wrestlers themselves, I felt like this time around in the cases of Sami Zayn, in the cases of especially Sami Zayn, but also in the case of Becky Lynch, you got out of character responses. Sammy was the one to kind of kick things off with Paul Heyman, and they very much, I would say, kind of played off of the question. If they sensed that the question was done in, you know, in character, like from somebody from the bump, or I don't know, like media that might not be as caring for out of character responses, then they would respond as if they were in character. If it was a question that was more about, like, you know, how did you like the getting into the behind the scenes, you had Sami Zayn fresh off the match on the pay-per-view, just kind of talk about how, talking about his character, you know, as a performer. So I think it continues to be a bit of an awkward mix, but I actually got like enjoyment and I got information and I got some real answers out of it. So I would say it was worthwhile.
Yeah. I think by and large, you're going to see these and certainly like I witnessed this at the AEW one as well, specifically from the performers, not as much Paul Levesque and Tony Khan that are sort of in those kind of authority roles, but for the performers, I feel they are going to default to character-based answers, and that's why it's really incumbent on the questions to try and draw that out of them. I don't think too many performers are adamantly opposed to responding like that, but to them, this is still a WWE setting. This is still a this is going on the WWE YouTube channel. They are in character mode. So I think you really have to draw that out of people with the right questions. And sometimes they're going to be very resistant to that. But it seemed like this crop of like a Sami Zayn or a Becky Lynch, you know, it seems like it's really incumbent on what kind of question they're being asked, of what direction they're going to go. If Becky's going to talk about rehearsing a spot versus Bianca Belair called me and sent a jet for me to be the fifth member. Like, we got both of those answers. So it can be across the spectrum.
It's almost like, you know, having a conversation about Santa Claus with children in the room and adults in the room at the same time. And you're somehow trying to, you know, hover between the two. I think, you know, the more experienced sort of veteran performers probably have a better ability to kind of transition between the two than maybe somebody new. That who doesn't necessarily know how to awkwardly transition, you know, between in character and out of character in front of the cameras. But I feel like, you know, as these press conferences go along, the veteran performers are going to wow, my voice.
Well, I was going to add as well, one of the participants that did not, take part in the press conference was Roman Reigns. And there was a story from Fightful Select on Monday that there had been some issue during a spot in the War Games match with Kevin Owens, where I guess Roman Reigns was kind of on his way to the back. He was, you know, letting his anger be known. And there was at least concern that he might have had an eardrum issue. And there was a follow up from the Observer site that, you know, after 20 minutes, it was like a non-issue essentially. But That Roman Reigns was at least scheduled for the press conference is what it sounds like. And going back to Clash at the Castle, I mean, he was one where he comes in and he's eyeing the media and acknowledged me and then just left and walked off. So, I mean, that was like, here was a guy that's, I mean, just finished a match. And I didn't think, I imagine for some of these performers, especially that have just been in the main event, this is not the most enticing obligation that is on their schedule when they've just finished a 40-minute match.
Yeah, and again, we talked about this, I think, for the Clash of the Castle press conference. I mean, these are very much method actors. These are people that are in character, or at least, you know, in the case of like a Roman Reigns, somebody who feels like he probably has to really get into character at all times. And to just go right from the stage to the backstage area and be out of character, it's certainly awkward. I get the sense like, you know, you're going to have performers who prefer like the New Japan Pro Wrestling sort of like press conference style, where you have media that are essentially kind of playing along, asking questions, and then guys being allowed to improvise as a character in there. It's strange. I don't know if I necessarily love just the concept itself, but we're talking about it for this long, so at least it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, just... You know, it wasn't like too many notes from Paul Levesque, other than it was a very successful show from the ticket demand. It was the highest grossing Survivor Series of all time, most viewed of all time, which, I mean, this is the second year in a row on Peacock. And thus you have access to, you know, like over 15 million paid subs and 30 million with access to Peacock. So you're talking about a larger pool now. But this was the largest gate ever for the company in Boston. Think about that statistic. I mean, that was, a huge success for them in this market.
And
without a Sasha Banks. Yes. And some people did note that there were some chants, during the show, but they were faint. I did not, register them as I was watching the show.
But. I heard them pretty well during like the Ronda Shotzi match. But I was expecting them during the War Games match, and they never occurred there.
Levesque was asked about the idea of getting away from a Hell in a Cell themed pay-per-view and as well the status of an Elimination Chamber, Money in the Bank, shows that are structured around a particular match type. And he did differentiate those, stating that a Hell in a Cell is designed to be a giant blow-off, that a feud should work towards that, whereas an Elimination Chamber or Money in the Bank is not really a culmination of a feud. It's like it's the concept of itself and the participants. Like the Rumble. Yeah, it's much closer to the Rumble than it is a Hell in a Cell. And I completely understand that that delineation. So, you know, he says we're always going to be assessing the calendar, but it does feel like Hell in a Cell will be when we have something that is ready for Hell in a Cell, whereas Elimination Chamber and Money in the Bank, those would seem to be matches that, you know, you're not building a feud towards a Money in the Bank. It's sort of like it is that one that can just fall on the same date every year and you can work around that concept.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, hearing a response like this made me really happy as a fan, because it tells me that this is a person who understands, I think, the creative implications of these sort of concepts and isn't just somebody thinking about the monetary value of the branding of a Hell in a Cell, you know, even War Games. Like, I was actually kind of curious to hear him speak about War Games too, in the same vein as a Hell in a Cell, where like he kind of suggested that he might prefer to use it as a blow off rather than, you know, this sort of like annual thing that they might put on once a year.
Paul, could we ever see War Games presented to you by Beyblade? Could it have a title sponsor attached to the match?
How about a Beyblade match, you know, as a special attraction on a PLE? But it tells me that this is a guy who actually has respect for sort of the creativity of it. And I think the money will follow, because over the years, Hell in a Cell has just been such a watered down concept that it comes around once a year and you're not feeling sort of that interest anymore. In some cases, it feels like it's been used to kick off a feud rather than end it. So I hope, like, he's done a great job of rehabbing, to an extent, these sort of secondary titles. Now he's probably going to, you know, try to do the same for some of these concepts.
Yeah. And, did state that they are not divorced from the idea of doing the traditional elimination matches, but he was right. It was the right year to freshen up the concept, and felt that Raw versus SmackDown was a bit tired. I would say it's in a coma. So yes, very tired. And yeah, maybe the elimination matches will come back. I cannot imagine a clamoring for, can we have those traditional elimination matches? I just, unless you are pure nostalgia based, like, I just don't know what kind of demand you would have for those matches that to me were never a big appeal to me personally.
I think they had their purpose, like, at a time when you rarely saw interactions between the main eventers, and like, you know, the eliminations of people would somehow bring two top stars face to face in the lead up to a WrestleMania main event in the future. But those days are really long gone, and sort of the timing of a match like this, I mean, feels no different than something you would see on a Raw like we saw today. I thought there was a chance today, actually, they'd make the OC versus the Judgment Day a Survivor Series elimination. I think for a TV special, it's perfectly fine, but for a pay-per-view sort of headlining thing, I mean, the attraction's not there.
Let's stay with Survivor Series, because it was noted by Fightful that Brian Kendrick was working as a producer at the show on Saturday, and then PWInsider.com had a follow-up that it was a tryout and apparently was not at the show on Monday night. Now, Brian Kendrick, that's going to bring about a range of reactions from people, given how he was, utilized and then removed from AEW earlier this year when he was going to do that match with John Moxley. And then a lot of people paid attention to interviews he had done in the past, referencing conspiracy theories related to the Holocaust, to the Sandy Hook massacre. And this ultimately led to his dismissal from AEW. And, you know, he came out with his apology. He has addressed this over the past year. His former partner, Paul London, has also, you know, spoken about like his issues with Kendrick, and that it, you know, he had heard him spouting off about this stuff in an incident that there were not cameras on him, that he had kind of positioned like he was doing this for shock value. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, people are going to have I'm somebody that I don't believe that you should be banished for life from making a living. I also believe, though, in, you know, doing this kind of thing in public and then repenting in private. Like, I do feel like it needs, like, you offended a great number of people, and you have to make sure that those that are offended are comfortable with you reacclimating yourself into the industry. So again, this apparently was a tryout, but this will bring about like that discussion again, and who you want necessarily in your locker room when like these are deplorable things to be talking about. It has severe consequences. They should be condemned. At the same time, I'm not looking for a guy that has to lose an entire career because of just senseless remarks made in the past.
Yeah, yeah. As far as like repenting goes, I mean, I think we have to also consider what an appropriate form is for him to be able to do that. He had, I believe, the apology on Twitter, I think. I don't recall the content of the apology and how much he specifically kind of spoke about those, like, you know, in, for instance, the Holocaust comments or the Sandy Hook comments. But like, as far as like a backstage role goes, it's a non-public facing role. And I feel for that reason,
there will be less scrutiny of that than an on-screen one. Like that's
Not as critical. You know, like what we were presented with in AEW was him potentially entering a storyline with Jon Moxley and Bryan Danielson live on, you know, right in AEW television with in front of people. And when you're trying to present a character for the audience's consumption, well, then the audience has absolute say in whether or not they want to see that person on their screen. Is he a viable money-making product that you can sell? At that point, on that particular day, he was not. But I also feel like he should not be ousted from the industry, you know. And so, like a backstage role like this, I personally don't have a whole lot of issue with. But I'm also not part of the group of people his comments were targeting. So I'd be most curious to you know hear if he had any sort of discussions with people that were working in the back that might have been personally offended with those words, and what sort of forum would he be able to have to kind of get if he feels any sort of remorse, you know, to get that message out there.
Well, that is what he would be facing, I think, is acceptance from those that he would have to be working with, and in some like being their go-between from the office to the performer if he is in fact coming in for a producer position, and those that are, you know, those are the people that, you know, if they want to hear an explanation from him, I think he owes it to them if those comments, you know, you're going to get called on that kind of thing. So anyway, we will see if this matures into an actual permanent position for Brian Kendrick, but he was there on Saturday.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Moving on to our next story. Did you get to see any of Ricky Steamboat's comeback on Sunday? This was the big time wrestling show where Ricky Steamboat, at the age of 69, had his first match in 12 years, teaming with FTR against Jay Lethal, Brock Anderson, and their mystery partner, Nick Aldis, with Arn Anderson in the corner. So we had Joe Dombrowski and Shane Douglas on commentary, and Jay Lethal came out wearing Randy Savage's gear from WrestleMania 3. So very apropos here. And Steamboat, dude, for $69, for a guy that over 10 years ago had a brain aneurysm, he looked tremendous. And he did work with his shirt on, but looked like a fit 69-year-old that didn't quite look his age. Like, looked, you know, he looked like a guy that certainly, this was hardly prime Ricky Steamboat. But they structured the match in a very smart way where Steamboat tagged in and he did what he can manage. Like, there was a headlock takeover by Jay and Steamboat's just selling. And when he hit the deep arm drag, like, this place just went nuts for it. Like, they just thought it was the greatest thing. Like, he wasn't, you know, trying to skin the cat or any, like, high crosses off the top. They did the spot from WrestleMania 3 where he was lifted up for the slam and tried for the inside cradle for a two count on Aldis. And then the baby faces all put on simultaneous figure fours, and we got the triple tap, 16:37. The match went. I listen, for this, it was hardly the spotlight that Ric Flair had for his last match back in the summer. This was nowhere near that level of success as a live event, and I'm sure on pay-per-view. But for Ricky Steamboat, like, if you watch this, like, I did not think this guy embarrassed himself at all. It was, you know, well worked with the six-man tag. I think that was the right way to go as opposed to a singles match. And I think that Ricky Steamboat would be really happy with what he did here for 16 and a half minutes. And this crowd really enjoyed this in North Carolina.
Was it the type of performance that you felt was the first in a series?
I can certainly see that if he had offers after this, which I'm sure for some of these conventions he will get. I think just the fact that Ric Flair show did so well, you're going to see a lot of these, like, you know, legends that can come back and do something. Would not surprise me if he tried something like this again. You're always kind of tempting fate when you're talking about a 69-year-old who has had his health issues. But I mean, he came in here and I'd be curious how he felt about the match afterwards, because I thought it came off really well. And they did a really nice post-match where Steamboat and Arn shook hands, and then FTR got on the mic and they thanked Ricky and Arn for all they did to pave the way. And then they got down on their knees bowing, and then Ricky just gave like a message just thanking all the fans. So, I mean, it was like a nice show. If you came there for Ricky Steamboat, I think this was like a feel-good match, and not the kind where you're watching somebody and Ricky Steamboat is going to bring a really high standard, and the last thing you want to see is a guy who's a shell of himself. But I don't think people were watching this expecting Ricky Steamboat of 1989. They were here to watch a guy at 69 who had a fine accounting of himself.
Can you see any national television company picking him up?
To be quite honest, I was surprised, like, that, you know, this, here's Ricky Steamboat that like this didn't happen on an AEW for just a one night only thing. Like, I'm sure he got a really great offer here to do this, but I mean, just this was in front of, you know, I'm guessing around 1,000 fans or so. And it was, you know, just like, this wasn't a huge show.
There's also a great deal of risk, you know, when you're talking about somebody who's 60, who hasn't been on TV for a long time. You don't exactly know how he's going to look. The proof sounds like at least it's there that he can at least, you know, put on a respectable performance. And after this, can you see an AEW or another company or even a WWE giving him a call?
WWE, I would, you know, you can never say never, but like after the brain aneurysm thing, like WWE, that like they did not want him doing anything, even when he was a trainer down in Florida. Like, they did not want, like, they really have put their foot down with a lot of these older talents, even younger talents that have had serious health issues, of not pushing that. I would say WWE, no. AEW, I wouldn't close the door on it. But it also probably depends on kind of the traction that this match got, and if they feel like there's something to do. Like, I would think in an AEW setting that this kind of, and they did the spot with Ricky Steamboat showing up on television with Jericho. Like, they even teased something a few months ago.
All this aside, I mean, this was basically an AEW match.
It was. This was all AEW guys minus Nick Aldis. So this was, you know, certainly something you could replicate down the road, or at least have Ricky Steamboat, maybe the idea that we could make him a referee and do some level of physicality. It's still, to me, like, it is tempting fate. And I think, you know, when you're watching Sting, it's like we marvel at this, but it's also like looking guys that are here. They are in their mid, and in the case of Steamboat, late 60s. That it's, you know, we know what the dangers are, and when these go off without a hitch, it's a feel good moment. But there is always that inherent risk, because if something went wrong, like it would be a really nasty, you know, look for any promoter that green lights this. But when it goes the other way, it's kind of we avoid that kind of harsh reality that is a potential. Dynamite ratings from Thanksgiving Eve. They did 880,000 viewers, a 0.32 in the demo. So in terms of 18 to 49, this was their highest since October the 6th. So they somewhat bucked the trend of this Thanksgiving Eve, which traditionally has always hurt them. This was the best they've ever done in the demo on Thanksgiving Eve. They were sixth for the night on cable behind the World Cup, NBA, and college basketball. And if you look at the breakdowns, this was a case of the male viewership being up so much that it offset how much female viewership was down. And this was the case for 18 to 49, 18 to 34, and 35 to 49. Women 18 to 49, other than that Tuesday broadcast last month, it was their lowest amount of the year. For men 18 to 49, it was their highest since September. So it was just a case of a lot of men watched this show and a lot of women tuned out from last week. So, but there was more of an increase of the men than loss of the women. And that's pretty much the story of how things went on Wednesday. But this, for Thanksgiving Eve, this was a very good number for Dynamite, higher than I anticipated it being.
Okay.
SmackDown is going to be on FS1 this week due to the Pac-12 championship, and FS1 is airing a replay of SmackDown immediately after. So that means SmackDown, the replay, will go against Rampage on Friday night. Night battle.
Replay versus
SmackDown replay versus taped Rampage.
Has this happened before?
With a replay? No, yeah. I don't think so.
I'm just kind of curious, like what people may expect the ratings to perform like. You know, like, what would be considered a success or like an embarrassment for AEW? You
know? I mean, I'm not like, we don't even have a lineup for Rampage, so it's kind of hard to even assume what they're going to have on Friday night. I mean, I am not expect. First of all, I think we should just compare the live SmackDown, which is going to do a much higher number than Rampage. I mean, the replay is what the replay does, but you know, there was a time that this might have been competitive. I don't think that this Friday it will be. Like, they're building up SmackDown, like there's going to be a big Bloodline segment, got the World Cup, so they have built up several things for Friday. Moving on, Being the Elite aired on Monday, and the most notable thing on the show was that during their montage of their highlights of the second match with Death Triangle from last Wednesday, they did not include any of the CM Punk or Ace Steel spots that they incorporated into the match. And they're sort of at the point where if they included the spots, that's the story. And if they exclude them, that's the story. So either way, it was going to be focused upon. And I wonder if they just knew that going in, but they did not include any of that on the Being the Elite show today.
What
does it mean, Way? What does it mean?
I don't know. I don't.
CM Punk coming back?
It means whatever you want it to mean. They did show a little bit of sort of like behind the curtain, a little vignette, I suppose, they kind of shot where they specifically talked about being heels tonight and they're going to cheat to win because this is a crowd that does not like them.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. Like, you did hear Matt and Nick talking like the day before in the airport that it might be a hostile crowd, maybe not. It was almost as though they were unsure, and you know, by match time, they certainly knew what direction things were going to be going out there. So, and that's how they kind of played things. Like, they came out and it was a fairly mixed reaction, but they certainly elicited the heel reaction, and it'll be interesting to see if any of that carries over to this Wednesday show. Or if it's right back to the Elite are beloved in Indianapolis. My question to you, though, do you expect any CM Punk chance on December 16th when SmackDown returns to Chicago?
Interesting. I mean, where would they chant it? You know, like in traditionally, like the Punk CM Punk chant has been a chant of sort of rebellion and a chant of dissatisfaction for what a WWE audience would be seeing on their screen. I don't know if the CM Punk chant represents that anymore. It's a chant of rebellion, potentially now against AEW. So if you have a crowd who, I don't see this happening, but if there's a crowd that, you know, perhaps isn't a fan of what they're watching on in front of them, or if they're not a fan of the Elite, then you would chant CM Punk.
The only person I could see being met with those chants would be Reigns.
Really?
Yeah.
Perhaps. Yeah. But I don't even know about that, because I just don't see that much association with Reigns and Punk. And Reigns is actually quite beloved, like, you know, so I wonder. Yeah.
Final things here. Andrade posted some photos that he has recently undergone surgery for a torn pec, and he kind of implied that it happened back in August, and he continued working with it. And his last match was the casino ladder match at All Out, and then he's been gone since the Sammy Guevara incident, which he was scheduled to wrestle that night against Preston Vance, and then they canceled the match. So he was continuing despite this injury. So a torn pec, that's a pretty long-term injury to come back from. So, you know, Tony Khan was asked about the status of Andrade at the press conference and indicated that eventually he'll be back, but this would certainly add quite a while to that timetable for Andrade.
Yeah. I guess a lot of people had speculated, you know, the what exactly had gone on to cause his absence. And I don't know if this was a case where, like, the injury kind of conveniently occurred at the same time as all the controversy with Sammy, or if it was the type of surgery that he, you know, decided to do now that he was putting off until an appropriate time. But I mean, it seems to me indicate that he's not done. I guess it doesn't really say anything about whether or not he's done with AEW, but I wouldn't anticipate him to be at all.
Yeah. I mean, this is you know, you're out of action, and, you know, Take care of your torn pec. So that's usually get through Thanksgiving and then take care of the torn pec. It's a good rule.
Yeah.
Tuesday, NXT, they have announced that Shawn Michaels will be joined by Road Dogg, Medusa, Molly Holly, and Sean Waltman to announce the Iron Survivor participants. So I don't know what we need 5 people to announce all of these. Maybe they're all going to have envelopes and they'll reveal each name.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Also announced is Katana Chance, Caden Carter, Nikita Lyons against Toxic Attraction, Indy Hartwell against Roxanne Perez, and Fallon Henley against Katana James. And then Wednesday for Dynamite in Indianapolis, we have the third match between Death Triangle and the Elite.
Sorry, hold on a second. We have 2 Katanas in NXT?
Sorry, that was my mistake. Kiana James. It's Kiana James, not Katana. Gotcha. Yeah, okay. Katana Chance and Kiana James.
Got it.
And Caden Carter. We have a lot of K's.
Those sound like Beyblade characters to me.
I distinguish all the names, but when you've got to read them all together, like, these are just like Caden Carter, Katana Chance, Fallon Henley, Kiana James. Oh my God. Okay. We got Road Dogg, Brian James.
They're either like
Kiana James.
Beyblade characters or Mortal Kombat, like, rejected characters.
Here. Yes. And then Dynamite has Bryan Danielson against Dax Harwood, Willow Nightingale against Anna J.A.S., MJF appears on the show, and Jade Cargill has her championship celebration from regaining the title she never lost. The possession. All right. The celebrating the possession of the TBS title. And that is all of your news, Wei.
I'm all caught up. Thank you so much, John.
Yes. You should hear us do the dry run of this in the afternoon. We go through all of this.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the rehearsals paid off.
Okay, Monday night, Raw was in Norfolk, right?
I think so. I think so.
The Norfolk Scope. Not Norfolk. Sure. Norfolk.
No. I don't give a Norfolk what it is.
Jesus, watch your mouth. So the first hour is commercial free. They did this back, the Raw after SummerSlam, which did a very good first hour. So this should inevitably boost the number, but a lot more.
What was the reason, you think, for today?
I don't know. They were coming off a pay-per-view. Like, again, the last time they did this was SummerSlam, and maybe they just felt coming off a pay-per-view, you do this. I mean, it certainly does combat. It does boost the first hour, and they did a very good first hour last week, and maybe they thought, you know, we're not pumping up the third hour, so let's get that first hour up to inflate the average. So, and I'm sure that it's not going to do what the post SummerSlam show did with Monday Night Football against it, but I'm sure it'll get a bit of a boost. They weren't going against the most intriguing Monday Night game either. So,
and also a picture in picture during the commercial breaks on USA at least.
Oh, okay, right. Mm-hmm. The Bloodline showed up, minus Paul Heyman and Roman Reigns, and they would be coming out later. But starting off the show is Becky Lynch, who states that she is the man of the people. So she goes out into the crowd and acquaints herself with fans such as Bobby and Zachary. And Bobby is so excited, he starts filming this on his phone. And then as Becky Lynch is like cutting a promo right next to him, you see him like down.
What is Bobby honestly thinking? You know, does he think no one's good? Like he'll never be able to relive this moment because no one's been will be capturing it. Like that's always so sad to see, you know, like this guy's one big cool moment
is happening and you're missing it out because you're trying to capture it, but you're actually missing it.
Yeah.
I would love if WWE flagged his video too when he posts it. Then I'll have no memory of it except on his phone. So she can't wait to slap the hell out of all the new people showing up here in the company. Bailey walks out, and boy, Bailey was like limping out here. Either she was doing a tremendous job selling, I don't know, but she looked the worst for wear coming out here. And she calls the fans idiot peasants and mentions all the matches she has had, ladder match, last woman standing, war games, and no appreciation. Becky says, that's because you lose. You're a loser. And Bobby tells Becky, go kick her butt. And then Io and Dakota Kai come down the aisleway in the crowd. They attack Becky. Bailey joins in and they fight up to the concourse into the merchandise stand, which was highlighted by Bailey using a Money in the Bank lunchbox as a weapon. And then they were all separated by security. And that was our opening segment.
Yeah, those things are serious. You know, you ever been hit with a lunchbox?
No, not a lunchbox, not as a kid. When I was in kindergarten, you know, when you would play at the kitchen center and you'd have those pan, you'd have like a little like metal pan or a plastic pan.
I would hope plastic and not metal.
Some of them are metal. I took a pan and I hit this guy in the head that tried to play with me on my first day of school and whacked him in the head.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
That was my first day of school.
Surprise me. Yeah. Well, look how you turned out. So, you know. Still hope for all the kids out there.
We actually became good friends, and he was always short, so I always joked that I stunted his growth because I
So, anyway. Goodness.
Anyway, I was a jerk. But, yeah, that's how the show started. So
strong reactions, I thought, you know, for this first segment, and a strong return from a babyface Becky Lynch.
Big-time Bex. That is gone.
Oh, completely gone. Yeah. I'm a little disappointed. I kind of liked all the fancy outfits and, you know, like her different hairstyles every single week. But I think, you know, for the sake of drawing a line between the character she was and the character she is again, probably necessary. I wondered, like, anytime they do one of these sort of segments, like how much screening of the crowd they actually do beforehand, how much is Bobby this guy's real name? You know, like how much of this was staged and how
well, you would think that they had that part planned, but you could also notice, like, when she asked a question, she didn't give them any time to, like, yell something. It was like the Zachary guy's like, what's your name? And then boom, pulls it away. She was like, brother loving him.
Totally. Yeah. So I could buy that a lot of this was completely organic or at least somewhat improvised. It's just always a risk to me. You know, when you're going on live national television with members of the audience, they could be incredibly awkward. They might not even speak English, or like, you know, it could go terribly wrong, as we have seen them in the past when they've attempted things like these. So, but I think something that would probably made them a bit more confident is the fact that Becky is so beloved. I didn't think there was any danger of like an audience not playing along with whatever she was saying. Perfectly exemplified here, I felt.
I liked it. It was something different to do the opening show promo than the standard fare.
Yeah. Bailey is a strong first feud, I think, for Becky. You know, it feels fresh, surprisingly, because I mean, even though like I feel like I must have seen every combination of the four horsewomen at this point, a singles feud between Becky and Bailey somehow still feels incredibly fresh. So I'm looking forward to it.
Rhea Ripley was out with Dominic and took on Mia Yim, Meechan. And Ripley stomps her foot and hits a backbreaker, and she's beating on Yim. Yim then attacks, hits a spinning DDT, and Eat Defeat gets stopped. Riptide is countered with a DDT, and then Dominic gets on the apron, and she we see Yim like pull down the rope, sending Dominic into the ring, and then he's just cowering away from Mia Yim, and Ripley attacks from behind. Then AJ runs out. The match is thrown out in 7:05, and then all the members of the OC and Judgment Day come out. They get into a big brawl, and Styles issues the challenge. He says it ends tonight, 4-on-4. And the Judgment Day agrees. So we get an impromptu 8-person tag coming out of this singles match.
I felt this could have been an opportunity for a Survivor Series elimination. But I mean, the other problem with the Survivor Series is that every single person has to take a pinfall. And
they do not like doing that in this Paul Levesque regime. Okay. Yeah. It's how can we finish the most amount of matches with the least amount of pins?
Totally. And you got that here. I mean, what you essentially got here was a Mia Yim Rhea Ripley singles match with an interlude of a 4-on-4 tag match in between.
So Gallows and Priest, they're trading head kicks, and then Carl Anderson gets the big tag. Eventually, Dominic is in and does the Three Amigos. There's a inverted DDT by Styles, and Rhea breaks up the cover on Balor, kicking AJ like in the face. Yim and Ripley are then tagged in, and it's Yim with the cannonball and a suicide dive. Dominic prevents a magic killer onto Priest, so Priest hits the South of Heaven onto Carl. Phenomenal forearm on Priest, and then Balor throws out AJ, and Yim lifts up Balor and scoop slams him, and the one intergender spot gets the biggest reaction here when Yim slams Balor, but then goes for Dominic, so Rhea stops Yim and hits the Riptide, winning this in 14:24. And after the promise from AJ that this ends tonight, we have Kevin Patrick remark, "Something tells me this isn't the end." And Corey goes, "I agree, Kevin. It might just be the beginning." It's like, what?
Oh, man.
The beginning.
How many more months of this? Damn.
I think we could just call it a day at this point.
Yes.
So let's go our separate ways.
Yeah. You know, they're not going to extinguish this on a, you know, TV show. I mean, they got to build up to something, you know. I think there's still life in this personally, like, especially when it comes to Rhea Ripley and Dominic. I still feel like they're pretty hot right now, and maybe you can get by with a whole lot more interactions with the rest of them. Yeah, good intergender 8-man tag. I found the Gallows and Anderson's portions kind of painfully average, but also necessary.
They gotta brace themselves. They got a long flight coming up in a couple of weeks.
Oh, that is true.
They gotta head over to Sendai.
That's right. Yeah. Once AJ got in there, and especially when Rhea and Mia got involved, the crowd really got into this, and the finish with everybody, I thought was a lot of fun here. I thought Rhea's heel charisma was really strong, you know, both on Saturday and also throughout the whole day, whole Raw, I should say. Her presence has felt really, really big, and I think her in-ring style looks really good. She, to me, is the best part of Judgment Day, and I think they're easily going to transition that into a strong singles feud with Bianca Belair.
Yeah, I would say Rhea Ripley is probably one of your favorites to win the Rumble in January.
Yeah, totally.
Saxton is with the returning Street Profits, who have been gone since September, and they recap all of the changes that have gone down. Alpha Academy walk in. They hate their catchphrase and requested a match with the Street Profits, and Gable says that they're going to put Montez Ford on the shelf for good, which sets up Dawkins calling Gable an elf on the shelf.
Short.
We have a big grudge match coming up. The Bloodline come out. Jay says his hand might be broken for real after War Games, and there are no cracks in the Bloodline. And Sami Zayn says that, you know, Jimmy took him in from day one. And Jay, your embrace after War Games, that was Usy. And says that they are now on the same page. Jay gives him a big hug. Then they invite Jimmy. And then they want a group hug with Solo. This was the funniest thing on the show. And Solo just stares at them, and you don't know what he's going to do. And then Kevin Owens' music interrupts. This was great.
I love this. Yeah. I love that Solo didn't immediately rush to hug.
I did not want him to do it either.
Oh, no. That's not the character. And it shows you that they actually have a lot of care for keeping Solo sort of like, you know, important and like his individual rather than just kind of being another part of this. Like they're crafting individual identities and giving individual spotlight to every single member. And you can write sort of, you know, this character trait about Solo Sikoa. He just, you know, he's great. Sammy, I felt continued to like get into that real emotional kind of heart of his character here that makes him so incredibly likable. You know, like for weeks and weeks and weeks, he's really just kind of been funny and that's why we love him. But now he's digging into like something that is just, you know, respectable about him. And that's his incredible loyalty. And I think, I don't know, like, earnestness to just kind of feel a belonging as a part of this family.
Well, Owen says he understands why Sammy did what he did at War Games. Like, yeah, you guys were on opposite teams. He says, I've done the exact same thing to you in our career. I'm not mad, and our careers have been linked together for 20 years, but now I'm just done with you. I don't want to tag with you. I don't want to fight you. I don't want to have anything to do with you. I don't even want to ride with you. And there was this look on Zane's face, and he just looks so sad at this realization. But then he says, well, I feel the same way, and I don't need you because I have my family now. And, I mean, this to me is just the payoff to this down the road will be fantastic. Like, this yeah. this segment, I feel, will be referenced many a time.
Totally.
And Owen says that he wants everyone to see how great Sammy is because I've known it for 20 years. And it doesn't matter how much they call you family, you're not their real blood and you never will be. So Jay says he's mad because you don't have any family around you. And if you have a problem with Sammy, you've got a problem with main event Jay Uso. So Owen says, I might be done with Sammy, but I'm not done with you, Jay. And I'll kick your ass any day of the week. And we set up the match for later on in the show.
Great segment. Lives up to, I think, the very high standards this entire cast has been setting on these shows. I love that, like, for the most part, like almost all the segments involving them, none of them feel like they're throwaway and none of them feel like they're insignificant. And it's not just because they're very well performed. The content kind of leaves you with a significant development in the storyline every single time. Here you got the continued bonding of Sammy with the Bloodline and specifically Jey Uso. We got to see what a happy non-pissed off Jey Uso finally looks like. You know, there's harmony within the group. Everybody is happy. Jay loves Sami Zayn. And then you get the further erosion of Sami's relationship with Kevin Owens. I thought Owens sort of portrayal was really interesting here. He could have come out and just kind of played your stereotypical pissed off guy whose friend turned on him, came out here and just started attacking. Instead, he came out sort of calling out the hypocrisy of babyfaces who do that, especially if it was him, because he's turned on Sami Zayn so many times. But the direction that he takes in not wanting anything to do with Sami is arguably way more hurtful than any sort of single attack would have been tonight. You know, he hates you so much, he's not even going to talk to you anymore. Okay. And that in many ways is a lot more disappointing than, you know, like a big beatdown or something.
Yeah. I mean, it really hits home the fact that they're on separate brands.
I don't think that matters at all.
They'll never see each other. How are they riding together?
I can't explain.
Okay.
No.
Backstage, Candice LeRae is back after 5 weeks away since her attack by Damage Control. And as she's walking down the hallway, we see Nikki Cross peeking out from behind the equipment. And it never led to anything, and it wasn't referenced, but she was just hiding in the back.
I don't know if this was meant to signify anything. I mean, you would think, yeah, maybe a Nikki Cross, Candice feud down the road. But I also maybe sense that she just kind of lives like
she's a lurker
in the corners. Yeah.
And Candice cuts a promo that she's going to take out Dakota Kai. And it's Candice LeRae who she's sick of being nice and walking on eggshells. She's here to kick someone's ass. And it's Dakota Kai tonight. Mm-hmm. Next segment, Saxton was with Riddle and Elias. Elias says he's a solo artist, but they are good as a duo. Riddle wants to win the tag titles. So the Bloodline walk in and state Elias will never win gold. So Elias challenges them and the Usos say anytime, any place. It's that easy to get a tag title shot. And maybe Riddle and Elias are going to be the ones to unseat the Usos way.
Hey, man, if the New Day can't do it, you know, maybe it's the Riddle and Elias era.
It could be. Very possible. This was their whole involvement on the show. So that was it.
That's the match next week on Raw. So the Usos on Raw. I mean, technically, they are like Raw champions. So there's that excuse.
The Street Profits and Alpha Academy. Very good match that they had here. I thought Dawkins and Ford were just great in this match. Gable was his usual self. And, you know, Otis always, you know, plays a role well here. Dawkins just hit, you know, he's trading arm drags with Gable. And then the Profits hit double Tope Con Heroes to set up the commercial break. They attack Ford's knee, and then Ford stops the American Automatic, hitting a DDT to Gable. Dawkins and Gable are in, and there's a jumping reverse elbow from Dawkins, hits the silencer, but then is stopped with a dragon screw and an American Automatic. Dawkins kicks out, and then Ford slams Otis after multiple tries. Dawkins then lands a strike, spinebuster, and sets up Ford to hit From the Heavens, pinning Gable in 12 minutes and 2 seconds. Very enjoyable tag team match.
Yeah, very good return match, I would say, for the Profits. Kind of picking up right where they left off with a great Dawkins hot tags, which is something he's kind of been known for lately. Very impressive athleticism from Ford, who looks like he's continuing to get a little bit, you know, more muscular, but still just as agile, and impressive physical feat here, you know, body slamming Otis. I hope this run from the Profits will lead to some interesting story. Unfortunately, they, much like a lot of the tag teams in the WWE, are kind of like caught up in the mix where if they're not feuding with the Usos, they don't really have much going on. You know, you have the Usos, who have both tag team championships right now, and the Profits, who have already lost to them. You know, they're just kind of like the New Day. So how are they going to make them interesting without belts to chase?
Yeah, I mean, it's an issue that they have in several of their divisions, where it's like, if you're not in the title program, it's like you don't need a title to still have a compelling story around, but it's something they struggle with. So and they've got a lot of bodies now on the roster to try and cater to as well. But, you know, it's a great match every time out when you've got, you know, whether it's Alpha Academy with Riddle and Elias or the Street Profits. And it's just kind of having some more substance beyond just your title program. Austin Theory comes out and asks, who's the kid now? Everyone said it was the worst cash-in ever and that I was stupid. But who looks stupid now? This was his whole plan, way. Blow the cash-in. And then Bobby Lashley will spear Rollins and I will land on top. This was the whole plan.
Well, he had us. Yeah.
Did it. Sure. He says he beat Rollins and Lashley at the same time. I'm no longer the next. I'm the now. And he is the face of Raw. Everyone is jealous of me. The Austin Theory era begins now.
I mean, I appreciate the fact that he no longer wants to be called a kid. I feel like he would probably also appreciate not having a Beyblade commercial be his Titantron either.
You're not going to let that one rest.
Come on. This is like the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
Out comes Seth Rollins with no commercial inventory. He tells him to shut his mouth, let the fans sing. So they hum his theme. And Theory interrupts, saying that he makes Seth feel like a thing of the past. Rollins says that he lucked his way into the title. Monday nights belong to me. Congratulations, kid. And this upsets Theory. And he dares Theory to hit him, but Theory will face him, but on his time. So he walks out. They're trying to give a very serious edge now to Austin Theory. They've eliminated the phone and really seem to be going full throttle with Theory at this point. And this probably is another TV match, because we have a long time before we have another pay-per-view.
I think this entire like sort of Money in the Bank character transition into like the current Austin Theory has been a really like bold attempt. And I would say like it's been successful. You know, like they took something that clearly was destined to not work in Austin Theory holding a Money in the Bank briefcase. And they, you know, their idea was to somehow get from that to Austin Theory being a viable, serious U.S. title champion. In having him lose the Money in the Bank the way they did, I mean, they were probably expecting him to look like a real joke, but it took, I think, a very strong performance from Austin Theory in his voice and shedding things like the selfies and all that to convince the audience that he's now got to be taken seriously. I think he's done that. I think the promos have been strong enough and his confidence now has been strong enough that I certainly look at him in a different light than what he was before. In ring to me, like he's keeping up, but I think he's still yet to really stand out. Certainly not to the level of a Bobby Lashley nor Seth Rollins right now. So to me, the test is still ongoing.
He's certainly on a better track now with this direction. But there's still to me a ways to go with this character. Saxton is with The Miz, who's got his bag of money. He tries to get out of the match with Loomis with an injured hand. Adam Pearce calls bullshit, and Miz threatens legal action, but the match is happening. Anything goes, Dexter Loomis versus The Miz, where if Loomis wins, he gets the money, he gets a contract, and if The Miz wins, what happens? Does Loomis leave?
Yeah. Okay. That's what he gets. Yeah, exactly.
Dexter Loomis returned to WWE on August the 8th. This is what this has all been built towards, Way. 3.5 months.
Yeah. It's long-term booking, I guess. To me, it's also one of the cases of like Levesque just kind of really getting hungry for like a big re-debut every single week without a really concrete plan of where this thing was supposed to end.
Would you say that of the returns that they have gotten more out of Dexter Loomis than Karrion Kross?
Define more, because I would hardly say that I'm more interested in Dexter.
No,
I'm not that interested in Karrion Kross either. But
in terms of who was going to come in and have weekly television time, yeah. I mean, like Loomis is on TV every week. He's got this program attached to him. It's like of all the comebacks, like he has gotten not the most focused, but among them.
But Karrion Kross has been in more high-profile matches, and I think with the shot that they were attempting with Kross, they were trying to make a main eventer right away. Whereas I think Loomis is always going to be destined to be this sort of, you know, mid-card spooky act.
Well, Pierce comes out. He grabs the bag of money away from The Miz, so the match begins after they brawl on the floor. Loomis pops up when the bell rings and he bashes Miz's head into the LED screen on the side of the ring. The crowd, of course, is chanting for tables. Miz then gets tossed off the desk after attempting a skull crushing finale. And then Miz uses a vice grip around the head of Dexter Loomis.
And for people who didn't watch, not a wrestling move, okay? A literal
vice. No, literally a vice.
Like that you have to kind of tighten with like a screw. Like the type you would see in a work, like, you know, a wood shop. It was a hilarious visual.
Was it Goodfellas that they used this in? Or they,
I don't recall.
They put a dude's head in and yeah, just, Joe Pesci just, had more success than The Miz did.
It was quite the visual coming back from commercial break, seeing a human being with the vice on his head.
And Loomis no-sells this, and then they go into the crowd. Miz is thrown into a TV monitor and then onto the table where Loomis elbow drops him through the table. They go back to the ring. The turnbuckle gets pulled off, and Loomis misses Miz running into the exposed buckle. Miz uses the rope for leverage. Loomis still kicks out, and then he catches Miz in a head and arm choke. Miz submits in 9:57. So after all of this, Loomis gets his contract, and then he starts handing out money to the crowd. He's like it's like Hogan and Beefcake at WrestleMania 9 here. Very selective in choosing kids who he gave these $100 bills to. And then The Miz attacks him from behind, steals back the money, and then grabs a $100 bill from one of the kids, which was a great spot. And it leads to Johnny Gargano super kicking Miz, taking the money, and handing the $100 bill back to the kid.
Yeah, yeah. Always good professional wrestling TV when you can mess with the disappointment of children.
this is what happened at that Raw at Skydome in 1999. You remember Russell Oliver, the Cash Man, and he came and he just started throwing money at people, and he came right up to us. And dude, I'm not kidding. He had just a stack of bills. And I ended up, me and my buddy, like we got like $120 between us. And
what?
And we were both like,
how big were the bills?
Dude, there were like 20s, there were 50s, and he's just throwing them out. And we're both thinking the same thing. It's like, we better spend this because this might be counterfeit. Let's just spend it. And we like went and like bought a shirt or something. And my buddy got like 100. I got like 30. But it was just like cash that they were throwing out. It's crazy.
It really is the cash money. You didn't even have to exchange your gold.
I didn't have to do anything. Like they had done a promotion where it's like, make a cash man sign and he'll give you money. But he just tossed it out to anybody. It's like, you didn't have to have a sign.
Oh, goodness. Wow. Okay. Well,
I'm just saying you can walk out of a show ahead and make your money back.
Well, that sounded far more compelling than I would say my reactions to the bulk of this Miz versus Dexter Lumis thing.
All I could say is that after all this time, like at least you would think like there would be a heated match at the end of it. And it was just like – it was nothing to me.
I mean, again, the fact that this never made it onto pay-per-view and the fact that I don't think they ever considered putting it even on the undercard of a pay-per-view tells you – that they probably don't view this as any sort of like real heated money.
This is a money making way.
it was a money giving match.
This match lost money.
It is what it is. And that's mid card comedy that I almost get the sense is more for children. You know, the people that were the target recipients of
this cash. I didn't hear kids like laughing uproariously at the vice grip or anything. I don't know if this was that appealing to any age group.
I don't either. I mean, you know, I'm not watching with children, so I can't really tell you. But clearly, like it's very slapsticky. You have the Miz kind of playing a very cartoonish villain. Dexter Lumis for a spooky character is sort of like a kid's version of a Bray Wyatt, I suppose. You had Corey Graves working overtime to kind of try to sell us at like Dexter Lumis being this very supernatural being. And I mean, on the same, like if this was on a main event or something like that, I don't know, like the TV show main event, then I think you can get away with it sequestered, like on a different show, but on the same program as like, you know, a Bray Wyatt, it's hard for me to like find this any scary at all. But then again, maybe I'm not the target demo.
I just thought this didn't have a lot of creative ideas to it. Like these are two wacky characters that at least for the blow off match, I thought they could have had a lot of fun with. And I just never felt like they latched onto. You didn't
like the vice on the head?
I mean, I guess. Sure. I don't know. It's just, we look at this of like the amount of time, like they aired the video package for this and it was just like months of ankles. And this was the big climax.
It was just to me like unfortunate that like Johnny Gargano was somehow injected into this when I think he had something really hot going with Kevin Owens, maybe in like sort of an alternate timeline he might have been a member of the War Games team, you know, and we'd probably be talking about him a whole lot differently. I mean, there is still the Tommaso Ciampa attachment to the Miz that I have to think that they will follow up with Johnny Gargano on the other side. So maybe we have that to look forward to, but for the time being, this is my lasting image of this feud.
Oh, that's perfect. I will be using that later. So he signs the contract, and now whatever you do with Dexter Lumis, I guess maybe someone.
I don't know.
Maybe he's going to be Gargano's like buddy.
He really would be a prime candidate for the 24/7 division. Like he would be a prime opponent for an R-Truth in the 24/7 division.
Go find that trash can or the floor that was next to that was underneath the trash can.
Right.
Dakota Kai against the returning Candice LeRae. Bayley and Sky get thrown out to the back, and Graves notes how Candice would rather be at home watching Bluey with her child. We got a Bluey reference on Raw.
Whoa, damn.
You just wait, Way. In about 18 months, you're going to be all about Bluey.
Oh, we're already starting to familiarize ourselves. Yeah.
For the love of God, if there's anything I can tell you, The day Oscar ever asks you about the Wiggles, you just say no Wiggles in this house.
I don't think we get that in this house is what I'll say. Yeah.
Just, it is, like, I feel it is doing things to my brain.
Really?
I hear it all day. It's just like I'm in
no
bizarro world all day listening to the like I have dreams about these songs. I hear them so much. It is just stop. Just don't do the Wiggles. Just avoid the Wiggles way. I'm going through the second run of the Wiggles.
Wow. Uh-oh.
I'm ready to move on. I'm literally talking to my daughter about like there's other stuff we can put on anything. No Wiggles. And she knows how to use the remote now. So I put something else on for her and she goes back and turns on the Wiggles.
Have you tried like maybe playing the Wiggles like visually, but then turning the sound off and playing like other music and trying to convince her that it's the Wiggles, would that work?
I will try that. I will try that. She's, she's in this kick right now where we, she, you know that, Dancemix 94, she listens to that song. I Like to Move It.
Oh yeah. Wow. Really?
She loves this song. She loves it. She asks us to play it at dinner like every night.
I don't know if that's any better than the Wiggles.
I'll take that 100 times over the Wiggles. I will take any music over the
How
Wiggles.
How did she get
anything.
Exposed to that?
I mean, we play a lot of stuff, and she latches on to what she likes.
Okay.
She's got quite a vast array of musical inspiration led by the Wiggles. Kai is in control. LeRae then lands a drop kick. We see some Kawada kicks from Kai. And then Candace lifts her up for, it was not identified as such, but on the, back when Candace was on the Independence and working with men, this was the ballsplex that she delivered.
Ooh, okay. Yes. Yeah. Specifically, I guess inspired by her tag team partner.
Well, they did not identify it as such in this match. They will have to come up with a name for that. LeRae then comes off the turnbuckle, misses with a Quebrada, and then hits the Wild Ride, the spinning neckbreaker, off the second turnbuckle, and pins Dakota Kai in 12 minutes and 26 seconds.
So I'm judging by your recap that you did not get this in picture-in-picture because this was a very unique start. They started this match during commercial break.
On Sportsnet 360, they don't air picture-in-picture.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. I had to watch this because my sports internet was not working. So I had to catch this through other means. And that means I caught the USA feed. And, they had Dakota Kai simply walk out. And then they cut the commercial break. And in the picture-picture, you see Candace run in. She's attacking Dakota mid-ring. And you see them go through the whole thing with the referee checking on Dakota, asking her if she's willing to start the match. And then they actually start the match. They did all of this in the body of the commercial, and for international viewers, they would have missed this entirely. So this was something that I felt was quite unique for Raw.
Very rare that they do something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I thought it was a very effective match in trying to convey a more intense and aggressive side of Candace LeRae. She's somebody who, again, much like Dexter Lumis, made her shocking debut and then was just kind of left, forgotten about. She made a return here, and I think she needed to make a big statement with the match that caught people's attention. And I thought this was that type of match. She was very aggressive. I thought it was pretty constantly interesting in terms of activity. I thought it brought the best out of Dakota Kai as well, who also I think needed one of these sort of big matches. They got a lot of time, and I thought the reactions from the crowd were really strong too. So feels like overall in this show, I'm almost getting the sense we're moving on from Damage Control, like sort of dominating the division, and all the baby faces now are kind of getting their shot spots to shine.
Yeah. I mean, you're watching this and you're seeing like SmackDown where they're kind of low on opponents for Ronda. And you see here on Raw where you have a couple of baby faces emerging, but you also have a babyface champion. I think you could do a lot worse than like a Candace LeRae to at least hold over Ronda during this stretch until you're getting into, Rumble Mania season, which they could always do.
They're going to have to do quite a bit of work to convince, people that Candace LeRae has a shot of like beating Ronda.
Well, that's a struggle in and of itself, but I'm just talking about people that can at least work with Ronda and could, be in kind of that veteran role that I think you want to have her paired with. Kathy Kelly spoke with Belair, Asuka, and Bliss, and Belair talked about the injuries coming out of War Games. She's done with Bayley, and they couldn't keep Becky out of action for that long. So Damage Control's plans backfired. She's proud of her team, and Bliss is not paying attention to any of this. She's off in her own world, and she has asked her thoughts, and she just comes to and says, yeah, Becky was a great call. So certainly something they're hinting here with Alexa Bliss, that she is not on board with Belair.
Yeah. So, I guess they needed a baby face for the War Games team. So we're delaying the Alexa Bliss sort of focus and likely turn until afterwards. It's after the War Games. We can actually give Alexa Bliss something now to make her feel like less of a generic baby face. You would think maybe from the direction of this sort of character that it's probably something Bray Wyatt related. They have dropped very subtle hints in the past. So I'm guessing that's maybe where we're going to end up.
And the main event, Kevin Owens and Jey Uso, who went over 20 minutes. We had Zayn and Jimmy in the corner, and Kevin Owens, no family in his corner. After the break, Owens lands on the knees of Jey, attempting a swanton, and Jey works the back, hitting a backbreaker. And for the rest of this match, Owens is favoring his back. From there, he hits a fisherman buster, lands a frog splash, but then Jey attacks him with super kicks, can only get a two count. The Samoan drop and stunner both blocked, and then Owens catches a kick, landing his own super kick, and he goes for the pop-up powerbomb, but his back gives out. So Jey hits another super kick. Owens once again kicks out, and then Owens takes out Jimmy with a super kick. Sokoa trips Owens on the apron, which sets up Owens laying on the mat. And the Uso splash misses, allowing Owens to recover, stunner, and pins Jey in 20 minutes and 55 seconds. And this was one of those count three, and within 30 seconds, we were off the air. They went right down to the buzzer here.
Yeah. This was a very, well, I mean, that 1 hour of a commercial-free Raw, I don't know. Maybe that kind of screwed them over with timing, perhaps. But really excellent match. You know, it's the type of match that reminds you how, of course, very good Kevin Owens is, but how great Jey Uso is as a singles wrestler as well. I thought he was tremendous here. Great body part work from the both of them. Jey selling his hand, Owens selling his back. I thought Owens, you know, was a decent challenger for Reigns. Certainly, like, maybe, I don't know, the most viable you could point to in a long time. But still, like, it was going to be really difficult for me to see him as that hot of a challenger, especially when we're so close to WrestleMania now. But I thought this match did really well in trying to elevate my excitement for Kevin Owens as a challenger. They made you believe that Owens is strong enough to take on the entire rest of the bloodline by himself. He beat Jey Uso here with everybody else ringside. And that leaves, you know, the pathway for him to challenge Roman Reigns. So, And it's a great direction, because now you continue the thread with Sami Zayn, where Sami Zayn might still be a little bit torn with his feelings for Kevin Owens while having to support his boss, of course.
Yeah, it's a lot of interesting ways of how you can weave in Owens and Zayn over the next little while, and the idea of those two at some point coming together. So I think they set up a lot between War Games and tonight with that great segment. I thought it was really strong stuff overall, involving what is your main storyline, regardless of Raw or SmackDown at this point. So yeah, it was a very lengthy edition of Raw, certainly. Yeah. That first hour, I mean, I enjoy those commercial breaks, I'm not going to lie. I kind of like having those. I would say it was the Bloodline stuff that really kept the show going. I enjoyed the Street Profits and Alpha Academy. I thought that was strong. I like the direction with Candice LeRae that they're taking. You know, kind of similar. They're trying to give more of an edge now to both LeRae, to Austin Theory. And, you know, they have got now Becky Lynch back in the mix. So there's more, I think, of an array of... You know, we were really seeing like a very thin roster on Raw, and that's kind of filling itself out. And if that means pulling some people from Friday, so be it. I mean, it's a 3 hour show. This is the show that does not need to be thin when you've got a roster on the other brand.
Yeah, especially if it's the Bloodline and Kevin Owens, you know, and Sami Zayn, like the one of the hottest, most well done programs they've had in a long, long time. I mean, I do worry about like the overexposure of that entire thing if you get to see it Monday and a Friday, but I think coming off of War Games, it was like good timing for it. I felt like this was a good first chapter in a new volume following War Games. War Games felt like a big reset. You're done with a lot of these feuds, and now it's time to kind of finally give the push to a lot of your characters, like a Candice LeRae, Street Profits, you know, who seem to be getting a bit of a restart. Becky Lynch as well, you know, starting something new here with Bayley. So it felt like a fresh edition overall.
And it also, to me, like, you watch tonight's show, and it made Survivor Series and the War Games, they felt important. Like, tonight's show was all the consequences of what happened on Saturday. It's not just, okay, now we're moving on to the next show. It was like, it was a important show on Saturday, and here is all the changes that have happened. And if you missed it, like, this was an important show for storyline implications, for different programs wrapping up, or different turns as well. So they really made War Games feel important on Raw, the aftermath of it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We will be opening things up now to your feedback. If you want to get in a super chat with any questions, you are welcome to. And we also have our forum feedback as well.
We don't have much of it, John. We have one piece of feedback at forum.postwrestling.com, and it comes to us from Muggin. And I can read this, John. He says, it was a worthwhile Raw. The commercial-free first hour was strong in getting the Becky versus Damage Control feud off and running. The Kevin Owens showed some serious growth in his promo over Sami's action, and he got to look like a world beater by overcoming the numbers game in the main event. Candice versus Dakota was a strong match, despite the first segment being unaired in Canada. We should say. The Loomis Miz story ended the way it should, and Miz snatching the C-note from that kid was some DiBiase-style healing. I hope now that Johnny Gargano can move on to something more substantial. Big ups to the commentary for putting over the danger of war games as everyone involved sold it effectively.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, as we noted. I thought they did a very good job in that regard. So thank you very much, Muggin. And there you go. That was Raw in the books. Eight more until the Royal Rumble.
That's a long time to fill.
Yeah, isn't it? 24 hours of Raw.
Hmm.
Can't wait.
Yeah. That's a lot. Yeah.
Especially if any of them are commercial free over these next 9 weeks. We will find out. But we will be commercial free on Ask Away Tuesday, 2 p.m. Eastern time. All Post Wrestling Cafe members can tune in live, and you can submit your questions during the show if you're watching live, or submit them in the thread at forum.postwrestling.com. Do you predict that I will have a voice on Tuesday?
I mean, we'll see if these coquitos have any sort of healing properties, you know?
Boy, I don't know. The coquitos might end my voice as it feels though right now. But thanks everybody for joining
us. John will type all his responses, and we'll get a computer to read them.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe I'll need a voice box.
Yeah, sure.
Kind of sounds like I have a voice box right now. All right. Thanks to everybody for tuning in live or downloading the show. Or missing the show. We thank those people too. Can I say one thing? Okay. So
oh, yeah.
Wei, I know that you have seen some of my painstaking timestamps that I have added on the YouTube. It takes some time to do that.
I know.
So today I saw that somebody left us a review stating, you know, they love the show, but can you please add the timestamps to the audio description as well? And my reason for not doing this is because they don't sync up. They're different times.
Totally. Yeah.
So because of this, he gave us a 4-star review instead of a 5. I was like, man, that to me, that was a low blow.
Then maybe we shouldn't do timestamps at all. Okay. Oh, I'm going to take the Kevin Owens approach. I'm not going to talk to you at all. I don't want anything to do with you. I don't want to tag with you. I don't want to have a match with you. I will not timestamp it at all.
Man.
Okay.
Wei is putting his foot down. I'm not doing a second set of timestamps. That is where I put my foot down. I'm not going to take them away from people, but come on. That was I felt that was just a little unnecessary to like deduct a whole star for.
It's okay.
Corrected, everybody. Okay. We'll live. That's it for us. Good night.